We're going to call to order the meeting of the Senate Committee on Rural Communities and Economic Development. Today is April 16th, 2013. I'm going to give you some information. As you know, this is kind of the end of the time as bills move or don't move. And so we have a number of things that we're waiting on and/or late amendments that are driving me absolutely insane. And if they aren't ready by Thursday, we'll be moving bills by quickly. But right now, we're going to carry over Senate Bill 250 for a possible work session and public hearing, possible. Senate Bill 19, work session only. Senate Bill 606, we just got some amendment stuff. And Senate Bill 737, which had a fairly large fiscal, and we're looking at some things that might remove that. So that being said, all of those will be carried over to Thursday. And with that, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 538. And with that, we will call up Michael Morrissey. I saw
Senator Close.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And Senator Close.
Okay.
You can go first.
Okay.
So Senator Close, thank you.
And then is Susan on the phone?
Yes.
Oh, good. Hi,
Susan. Susan's listening. Am I? Okay, we'll let Senator Close go first.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, and members of the committee. I'm Senator Betsy Close, and I'm sponsoring Senate Bill 538. Senate Bill 538 allows two or more counties to enter into an intergovernmental agreement to petition the Land Conservation and Development Commission for regional definitions of agricultural and forest land. In 2012, there was an executive order by Governor Kitzhaber that allowed Jackson, Josephine, and Douglas counties to develop a pilot project which stemmed from the 2012 Legislative Assembly session granting some funding for initial work by interested counties. Essentially, Senate Bill 538 takes that concept and allows any two or more counties in the state to enter into the same process. Here today to testify is the chair of the Douglas County Board of Commissioners, Susan Morgan, by phone. Susan served in the House of Representatives for 10 years and was an advocate for natural resource issues. I had the pleasure of serving with her in the House, and I appreciate her taking the time today to testify on this bill. They are in the middle of this process, and so I think this will be very interesting for the committee to hear. Thank you.
Thank you. And we're going to have Michael Morrissey come up. Any questions for Senator Close? Okay. We're going to have Michael come up. Yes, Susan, what were we going to say?
Go, I'm fine.
Okay. And we'll have Michael give an overview of what they've been doing, and then Susan to follow that. That sound okay, Susan?
That sounds good.
Okay. Thank you very much. And thanks for being here, Susan. I also had the opportunity to work with Susan, which was very, very appreciated on my part.
Chair Roblin and committee members, I'm Michael Morrissey. I'm the policy analyst with the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and I'm the lead policy staff with regard to the Southern Oregon pilot project. Senator Close mentioned there was an executive order that was issued in May of 2012, which followed on 1.5 sessions, I'll say, of legislative committee discussion of roughly the same concept. The executive order spelled out steps that would allow any two of Josephine, Jackson, or Douglas counties to band together and prepare materials for a possible rulemaking submission to LCDC for the purpose of considering a new regional approach to what lands must be planned and zoned for farm or forest uses. $350,000 was legislatively appropriated to assist the counties and to assist state agencies to work with the counties in this project. No deadline was placed on the work product, but all parties understood that the funds would only be available through June 30 of this year. The department then spent a fair amount of time communicating, going down to the three counties, talking with the boards of commissioners, participating in public meetings to kind of gauge the interest of the public and the elected officials in those three counties. The county commissioners did, of all three counties, did indicate a readiness to move forward in July of 2012. And there was quite extensive discussion about what are they getting themselves into and how are we prepared to help and could we meet their expectations and to some degree vice versa. At that point, our staff carried on really extensive discussions with mostly the planning directors of the three counties. And it took quite a while to basically get agreement on what each of the counties wanted to aim for or target or have as their ultimate objective, and maybe somewhat more difficult to make a regional product that you could wrap whatever was going to be ultimately recommended into under a regional umbrella and ultimately submitted to LCDC. A work plan and a contract between the department and the Rogue Council of Governments, which is the contract agency for those three counties, was finalized in December of 2012. At this point, I would say that, Commissioner Morgan will tell you her take on things, I think, from the start, and at this point in time, Douglas County's somewhat clearer on what they'd like to get out of this, and the other two counties are still involved in mapping and analysis and discussions about farm and forest land and what they'd like to get out of it. So I think Douglas County's a little ahead of the game at this point. The contract that we have with the counties identifies eight tasks to be accomplished prior to the ultimate submission of a petition for rulemaking, and then timelines and products and disbursement of money are assigned at each of those tasks. Where we are today, the department has released $110,000 for the completion of the first three tasks, and another $110,000 is ready to be dispersed when task five is completed. Now, task five is a pretty important task in the sense that that involves the analysis that has been gone through on the current farm and forest lands and consideration and recommendations for alternative definitions of farm and forest lands in areas that the counties may want to make those designations and definitions. The staff has briefed LCDC at each of the monthly meetings of LCDC on this project. I mean, we're taking it pretty seriously, and we also want to make sure that our commission and their elected officials have every opportunity to talk back and forth. And I guess my assessment at this point is that things are moving along pretty well, and there's general agreement, and we all want to get to the end product. I want to let you know that $100,000 is in the department's budget as a placeholder, roughly speaking, as a POP, a policy option package, for discussion in the Ways and Means Committee of further funding of this project if it's needed. I guess I would say, and I'd be interested to hear what Commissioner Morgan says, to get to the end of the product by June 30, I think, is a fairly tall order, and I think the counties are doing the best they can. They're also, I believe, concerned that at that point there's no guarantee of further funding, so they're going to try to do as much as they can. And then we'll see kind of where we are at that point and what kind of discussion the legislature's had about whether any more money might be forthcoming to finish anything that isn't finished. At this point, I think the department's point of view would be a pilot was approved by the, directed by the governor's office, and money was appropriated by the legislature, and it's exactly that. It's a pilot. I think there's a lot to be learned, and again, I hope Commissioner Morgan can say a little about this, but how it was approached, what elected officials and what citizens thought they wanted in the first place, and if that's looking any different at this point, and if it will look different still at the end of the day when they finish their work, and then how it is addressed and handled by the commission when the rule petition is submitted. So, for example, at that point, the commission could say, and there's opportunity for public input, gosh, this amount of work was great, and that amount of work, and we need some more work done. So we're very interested in getting to the end of the product and seeing what we all learn and then seeing how the commission deals with it. So that's kind of a status report on that project.
Okay. Thank you very much. And
thank
Susan.
You.
Well, for the record, my name is Susan Morgan. I'm a Douglas County Commissioner, and I have also sitting with me here today Cheryl Goodhue, who is our planning manager. And I think Michael did a very excellent job on outlining the kind of the big picture of this. We are definitely more down in the weeds on this, and there it was, I think, quite gratifying to see how quickly the county commissioners came together and agreed that, yes, we did want to do this project, and appreciate the give and take with DLCD on actually defining the work plan. I think that what was outlined to you was pretty much the first part of the process, where the county, in collaboration with the department, does this series of phases and tasks within the phases, and passes off either a report or a petition for rule change to the department. The department then takes over the process, and working with state agencies and pretty much whoever they feel is beneficial to the process, taking a look at what we hand off, reviewing it, changing it if they see fit to do that, and then handing it off to the commission for the commission's act, whatever they want to do with it. So a long process, and it took us quite a long time, as you were told, to actually come up with the work plan. So we didn't really get to the final draft agreement until November 7th, as Michael told you, and actually get started on doing the work. And so they, initially we needed to go through a public information and participation process where the commissioners were briefed, there was opportunity for public input, there were websites put together, and the education piece around the what laws and regulations are in place from land use planning, ODF and ODA, that relate to farm and forest lands. The we formed technical advisory committees in each of the counties, and represented on the technical advisory committees are farming, ranching, forestry, special districts, mining slash aggregate, economic development, land use, and city government, and then ex officio on each of those tasks is the DLCD, the Oregon Department of Agriculture, Fish and Wildlife, ODOT, Water Resources, and tribal representatives. So the other, also we worked together across the three planning departments because we also had different systems of collecting data and displaying data. So we had to come up with protocols to do it in a common way so that towards the end of our part of the process we could merge it all together. So we worked all through that and have developed a very large stack of rolled up maps, GIS data maps, for the each of the entire counties, showing soils capability for farm use, forest productivity, high-value soils, groundwater, Goal 5 inventory, wildlife mapping, fire protection districts, parcelization and existing development, current zoning designations, lots of data on these maps. Believe me, we burned up a lot of ink cartridges doing this. And where we are right now is we're in the process of assessing these resource lands using these maps and using the expertise in the technical advisory committees and the state agencies. And this assessment is taking place within each of the three counties. So the, what we're asking these folks to look for are two main things. The first thing being an alternative forest land designation that includes revised methods for authorizing dwellings, alternate ways to manage non-commercial forest lands, and at the same time protect the forest values. The second task is to take a look at potential alternative farm parcel size opportunities that are take into account the characteristics of ag land in southern Oregon and also emerging agricultural practices. We're seeing a lot of opportunities here around viviculture and organic farming and those kinds of things, again, while protecting that the agricultural land values. Then the next phase will be, and we are not in this phase yet, is an assessment of mapping errors that were made as the counties went through the plan acknowledgement process, an analysis of the carrying capacities across all the three counties. So that's when we merge all of this county-by-county information together. And then phase three, which is actually the preparation of the petition or the report to hand off to the department. Funding was really important for this project. All of the three counties are safety net counties, so we're very financially constrained right now. And we would not have taken this project on had the funding not gone along to pay for the RVCOG to oversee the process and pay for the staffing time within each of the three planning departments. Because of the late start to this, clearly we aren't going to get finished by the time the funding runs out at the end of the biennium. We've done an analysis and we're in the process of transmitting the analysis to the department and to the Ways and Means process. What we're anticipating is that we'll turn back about $130,000 of the money that was appropriated to us, simply because we won't have time to spend it before the bell rings, and we need, and it will either, it would be great if it would be rolled forward into the next budget or reappropriated into the next budget. We've also identified a need for an additional about $116,000 because the project is turning out to be much more complicated than we anticipated. And there is going to be additional staffing time required to finish the project. So we're hoping that we'll get that support in DLCD's budget. I think that this has definitely energized the land use planning community, and definitely the ag and forestry community. They're very interested in the way that the project is approaching the question that we, the problem statement that we asked, and I'll just read you the problem statement so you can kind of get an idea of the bottom of all of this. The problem statement was, our rural lifestyle is an integral part of the fabric of Oregon. Counties have been struggling for years within the structure of Oregon's laws to provide for rural development opportunities. The broad scope and definition of farm and forest lands, together with the lack of statewide planning program recognition of rural development, has created a regulatory environment that has constrained a rural lifestyle. The examination of our farm and forest lands, recognizing that non-resource areas exist in southern Oregon, may provide an opportunity to address this issue. Any refinement of the scope of the definitions of farm and forest land will continue to focus on protection and conservation of higher value resource areas. So this opportunity has been very interesting to people, I think, all across the political spectrum of land use planning. And we have chosen to take a data-driven approach to this. So we would like to use the information that's gathered from the mapping process and the expertise that is applied to that mapping information by the Technical Advisory Committee folks to build a case for an outcome. So we don't know yet what the outcome is going to be. And with that, I will be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Senator Brzezinski.
Afternoon, Susan. How are you doing today?
Doing very well, thank you.
Just a question regarding timing. I understand that you're not going to be able to complete and within this fiscal period. Do you know how long do you think it will take for Douglas County and the other two to reach the point of where they will be able to, let's say, take action on all of the work that they're doing now?
Well, we anticipate that we will stay on the same timeline. So we got started 6 months later than we expected to, so we anticipate it will take us an additional 6 months.
Thank you.
So do you see, are you starting to see a vision of where the outcomes might lie?
At this point, we have not had the analytical part of the process. We've essentially gathered the data. We've educated the Technical Advisory Committee about the platform from the regulatory perspective that they're working with, and we have just begun the Technical Advisory Committee meetings.
Do you believe, Susan, that when you get done with that portion and you finally get to your outcome portion, that the experience you have had can be somehow transmitted to us so that maybe if we do it a second time, it could go smoother, have a more direct route than what you've had to go through?
Well, and that's certainly one of the expectations for the outcome, and that was one of the reasons why it took so long to work out the agreement with DLCD, because we were very mindful that this was a pilot project and that it would be looked at by other areas of the state, and there have been other areas that have already expressed very much an interest in going through some process like that. So we're hoping that by being very deliberative and very analytical and keeping good records, that when we turn this over to the department and they do their analysis on it, that they're going to do the same thing, and that we're going to be able to learn a lot about how to do this better or differently or whatever. And our hope is that this will inform more dialogue.
Okay, so 6 months added on would mean that it would be about, get done about January?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, but what would be done about January is the county's handing to the department the county's piece. So
okay.
The department's part of this would go beyond that.
Okay. I want to thank you very much for your testimony, but I also want to say to you that from my perspective, having been a part of the conversation that got this pilot going, I stand committed to trying to figure out how to get the money for you to finish it, because I think that's really important. So
I'm
seeing a lot of nodding heads here that agree with that, so I'm happy
thank
about
you.
That. Yeah.
Thank you.
So any other questions?
Thank you, Susan, for being with us. It was excellent.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
We have Nick Lelick from Deschutes County who's going to be on the phone next. So we're probably going to say goodbye to you, Susan, and call
Best
it in.
Best of
him.
Luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hi, Nick. This is Senator Roblin and the Rural Communities and Economic Development Committee, and it's exciting to have you here on the phone. I hope you were expecting us. No, we knew you were.
I certainly was, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much for the call.
And we'd love to have your testimony on 538.
Great. Thank you very much, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Nick Lelack. I'm the Deschutes County Planning Director and Interim Community Development Director. I have provided written comments that I hope you have or will receive, and so I'll just summarize those rather than going into a lot of depth. So thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 538. Deschutes County has implemented statewide planning goal 3, agriculture twice, first in 1979 and again in 1992. Both of these processes identified a number of challenges with commercial farming in Deschutes County, and those challenges continue to exist today. I've listed those in just a high-level summary is this poor soil quality and depth that we have in much of the county, limited water availability, a high elevation that contributes to a short growing season, and distance to major markets, among other factors. However, Goal 3 only addresses soils as being the determining factor in whether a property is designated as exclusive farm use zoning. Over the past 4 years, Deschutes County has supported and participated in legislative discussions and hearings to pass measures or participated programs to reevaluate agricultural land designations in Deschutes County. My letter summarizes some of those efforts. Last year, we were on the verge of initiating one such program with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. But at that point, Executive Order 12-07 was issued to initiate the Southern Oregon Pilot Program. Please know Deschutes County supports this effort. We're closely monitoring it, and we understand it's requiring significant state and local resources and taking additional time. At this point, Deschutes County supports Senate Bill 538 because it would guarantee that two or more counties may work together and petition the Land Conservation and Development Commission in the future to initiate a collaborative process with several state agencies, cities, and our citizens to consider the adoption of regional definitions of farm and forest lands. If necessary, we would suggest making it mandatory that such petitions may only be submitted to LCDC after the Southern Oregon Pilot Project Program is completed. But Deschutes County requests that the committee and that the legislature please provide certainty that future regional resource land definition efforts will be legally allowed. We can then plan ahead for such efforts and budget accordingly. That concludes my testimony. I appreciate your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? I just have a couple. As you know, the three counties in the southern regional, because it's going now, were hard hit financially, and so the state has actually come forward and put some money in to help make that happen. Do you see future developments needing that same assistance from the state?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I assume that a lot of counties and a lot of regions will need that assistance from the state. I'm not certain that Deschutes County would need assistance, or at least not that level of assistance. Deschutes County, our Board of Commissioners, has discussed funding this effort in the future. Of course, we would be required to participate with another county, such as Klamath, Crooker, Jefferson, and I would expect that we would need to share in those resources, but certainly our region, I don't think, would require the same level of state involvement in terms of financial resources as the three Southern Oregon counties currently do.
Okay. Any further questions? I want to thank you very much for taking your time today and being available for the phone call.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it.
And you can listen on or watch on the computer, however you want to do that.
I'll watch on the computer. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye.
Is there anyone else here who would like to speak? Oh, here we go. We got the list. Roger Kay. Laurel Hines and Steve McCoy.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. My name is Roger Kay. I'm current president, Friends of Marion County. Our address is listed on our testimony, P.O. Box 3274 in Salem, Oregon. We are a nonprofit membership organization, and we oppose Senate Bill 538 and request that this bill not be passed out of the committee. We oppose the measure considering the former history of Measure 37 and 49. Over 60% of voters on Measure 49 agreed that farm and forest protections are necessary to the health and welfare of Oregonians. SB 538 negates that vote by providing exceptions from our statewide land use laws to any two counties and opens the door to future exceptions invoked by both the courts and legislative action. We oppose the measure because groundwater availability may be affected that serves farmers and other users. We oppose the measure because farms and forests adjacent to cities will be threatened by sprawling subdivisions and other development which threaten our transportation systems. We oppose the measure because UGBs will be compromised. Subdivision, commercial, and industrial development outside of cities will become a threat to the availability of services to current city residents. We oppose the measure considering that the process under Executive Order 12-07 is still ongoing and we do not yet know its impact. These are but a few of the reasons this measure should not be passed out of your committee. Please vote no, and thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I am Steve McCoy, representing 1000 Friends of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in opposition to SB 538. As was just discussed at some length, in 2012, the legislature appropriated $650,000 for the Southern Oregon Pilot Project to do much of what this bill does. The governor subsequently signed Executive Order 1207 to begin the process. The pilot is being done under current laws, and it is ongoing, of course, in Southern Oregon. Passing another law to do much the same thing is premature until we see the results of the pilot. We have a pilot under current laws. The stated intent of this bill can be accomplished under current law. So why do we have this bill? You heard the Southern Oregon problem statement. It was about rural development. SB 538 is an attempt to water down new definitions of farm and forest land. Under current law, new definitions of agricultural and forest lands need to be based upon the usefulness of the lands for farming and forestry. However, SB 538 introduces factors not related to the actual usefulness of land for farming and forestry. For example, Section 2.5, little d, big B, of SB 38 contains two loopholes. It allows the new definitions to be based upon, and I quote here, the long-term viability of farm and forest operations in the region, and it directs the counties and LCDC to take into account, again quoting, the location of resource lands in relation to lands employed for non-farm and non-forest uses. The long-term viability of farm and forest operations in the region is the first part of that. Get out your crystal ball. Long-term viability, resource viability of the region is impossible to know in the short term, clearly. Also, categorizing lands as non-resource based upon the prospects for the entire region rather than based upon the quality of a particular land will act as a self-fulfilling prophecy. High-quality lands will be deemed non-resource when farms on lower-quality lands in the same region struggle. This will take the best lands, the ones that we need to protect the most, out of resource use. The other loophole in this section, or in this subsection, I guess, directs the counties and LCDC to take into account the location of resource lands in relation to lands employed for non-farm and non-forest uses. So here we're talking about locational factors. This would logically lead to removing lands that are near urban growth boundaries, highways, and developed uses from resource use. The provision effectively undermines the intent of the urban growth boundary by redefining even very productive land as non-farm, no matter its contributions to the region's economy or productivity. This would result in poorly planned residential development and rural sprawl in places where services are not yet available. Then when a nearby urban area needs to expand, it will not be able to fully utilize this area due to conflicting uses. It will also waste taxpayers' money on disconnected infrastructure and more expensive services. So why is all this important? A critical mass of resource lands is necessary to keep industries that support and profit directly from resource uses in business. Without the seed shop, the implement store, or the tractor dealership, farming becomes more difficult. Without the mill, forestry becomes more difficult. There's no market for local logs. When the tractor dealership or the mill closes, good local jobs are lost, and it becomes more difficult to keep remaining lands in resource use. This is not merely academic. Agriculture is the number two industry sector in our state. It's responsible for 1 in 8 jobs. It's responsible for 15% of the economic activity in the state. It's traded sector, bringing new money, new dollars into Oregon. 80% of what we produce here in agricultural products is shipped out of state. 40% is shipped overseas. Agriculture is, of course, reliant on farmland. Do you know what the third largest industry sector in the state is? It is forestry. Forestry sector makes up 6.9% of Oregon's total industrial output and contributes, on average, $12.6 billion a year to the state's economy. According to OFRI, just over a third of timberlands in the state are private. However, over three-quarters of the timber harvested in the state comes from private lands. So from this minority of lands, 33%, or 34% actually, of timberlands that are private, 75%, a full three-quarters, or 76% actually, a little over three-quarters, of the timber harvested in the state comes from private lands. This supports over 200 mills of varying sizes in the state and the jobs that are at those mills. Without private timberlands, the forestry jobs and the jobs at value-added processors go away. Lands and private timber production mean jobs. Resource land is the feedstock to farming and forestry. SB 538 would cost Oregon resource lands and the jobs that rely on them. We ask you to support jobs in Oregon by opposing this bill. Thank you.
My name is Laurel Hines. Senator Roblin and senators, thank you for the chance to speak. I live in Salem. And what the county commissioners who called in said sounded impressive. It sounds like they're doing a lot of planning and technical evaluation of things. But my experience in going over the last 10 years or so, going to numerous county commissioner hearings in the Marion County area, is that county commissioners base a lot of their decisions, most of their decisions, in my opinion, at least of the hearings I've gone to, on preconceived ideas and political leanings, that sort of thing. And I've attended hearings where they've ignored science, they've ignored their own experts, such as hydrogeologists that they've hired. They've ignored the hearings officers in some cases, and make their decisions based on who they're connected with often. And very often, if there's three commissioners, two commissioners can dominate all the decisions. And the one who opposes that just gets voted out. So and I think this is a bad bill in terms of eroding the land use, the good land use system we have in Oregon. I think that land use decisions should be made by experts at the state level, and this should not be left up to the counties. I also, from what I've heard, this is still a pilot program. You don't even know all the decisions that are going to come out of all the planning that's being done. And I think that this whole thing should be put on hold or scrapped completely. I love Oregon's land use system, and I think that it was conceived in a very good way, and maybe some small things could be tweaked on a state level, but I don't think this should be left up to the counties. I think that once the door is opened for this, it's going to be eroding the whole land use system as other counties take this up. And no matter what they decide, when it comes down to hearings at the local level, things will not be decided based on long-term planning needs for the best of the whole state. Thank you for the chance to speak.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Thank you all. Next we'll have Jonathan Manton, Katie Fast, Peggy Lynch.
Yes, please.
Thank you. Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. I need to go talk about water in a minute. So I presented testimony on OLIS regarding this project. The League has been following this project since it was first discussed in the legislature. And I provided with you the website so that you could see what was happening regarding to this project. I appreciated Commissioner Morgan's comments. And the maps that are stacked someplace, but they are not available to the public yet. And that's one of the many frustrating things as we move forward. We do believe that the state is investing a great deal of money in this pilot, and therefore we want to see what happens with it. Our concerns, besides the fact of making sure that the Department of Ag, the Department of Forestry, and Water Resources, and DEQ, and ODF&W are all a part of this discussion, and you heard from the commissioner that that's true, is the citizen involvement portion of this. As the former chair of the Citizen Involvement Advisory Committee for LCDC, I helped with the Jackson County Regional Problem-Solving Citizen Involvement to make sure that the people in that area had an opportunity to voice their concerns to their local elected officials prior to any major decisions. it's going to be really difficult in this pilot project to have that kind of robust engagement that they had in Jackson County. So I'm very concerned about that, and even with the $550,000 that the state has invested in this, I want to see it happen. The other truth underneath this is exactly what you heard. It took a great deal of time from May to December. Heard that someplace, to actually get an agreement amongst the three counties. Except for the metro area, counties look upon themselves as individual units, personal to themselves and important on their own. And trying to find a way to have two or more counties work together on an agreed-upon set of definitions in this particular case is going to be challenging, and I'm still waiting to see if, in fact, they are able to do that. But until that, we don't believe that this is an appropriate time to move this bill forward. Thank you.
Chair Roland, members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Jonathan Manton. I'm testifying today on behalf of Central Oregon Land Watch and Friends of the Metolius. Just quick little personal background on me that I was just remembering that when we testified on a similar proposal last session that I shared, and I didn't share that with this committee, so I'll do that. I got into this issue growing up in a small town in rural North Georgia, and we saw a massive change in our farm-based community in a very short amount of time. There was just, it's a different land use system that's at play there. And when I go back home and visit now, one of the first things that everyone talks about is, my gosh, you know, we lost our farmland, we lost our sense of community. The kind of the sprawl that's happened there really changed the way of life. And you hear that from the folks who vote for any number of different parties there. So that's just kind of my background, is I saw a rural community change to not being rural anymore and what that did to the people there. And that's part of why I work in this field for the clients that I work for. Specifically to this bill, currently agricultural land has regional definitions for eastern and western Oregon that reflect different soils and agricultural practices in those parts of the state. Under current law, LCDC has the authority to change the definitions of agricultural land as well as the definition of forest land to take into account those regional differences. So Land Watch and both Friends of Metolius believe that ag and forestry are industries of statewide significance, and the state is the proper level at which to define them, and that the current authority held by LCDC is appropriate. Thank you for your time today.
Hi, good afternoon. For the record, Katie Fass with the Oregon Farm Bureau. Oregon Farm Bureau does have concerns also with Senate Bill 538. While Farm Bureau is supportive of a regional structure of LCDC that better represents all areas of the state, however, we do not support redefining agricultural lands by the counties based on factors other than statewide criteria laid out in Goals 3 and 4. A standard definition of agricultural lands and forest lands is key to maintaining the state's agricultural base and minimizing conflicts from non-farm uses while supporting the agricultural infrastructure. We agree with previous testimony that this bill is probably immature at this time or premature until the pilot project is completed and all the stakeholders can be brought together to assess its application for the future. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for the group? I want to thank you. And is there anyone else out there that would like to testify on Senate Bill 538? Again, thanks to all the people who came and testified today, because I think it really does help us, and I think that we're coming to the conclusion that we need to find out how this other project works. And that's kind of what I've all seen, and we look forward to helping with that. So with that, we're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 538. And we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 841. And we're going to invite up testimony of Richard Whitman to come up and talk to us a little bit about this wine bill that we got going. We may afterwards, do you want to add the adopt the sentence? We do. Okay.
So, thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, Richard Whitman, Governor Kitzhaber's Natural Resources Advisor. It's a pleasure to be here before this committee this afternoon. I'm here to testify on Senate Bill 841, which came out of a collaborative consensus-based process to develop legislation on wineries that was within the vision, if you will, of a pretty broad range of stakeholders. So I've convened a work group on this that met for a series of months and did reach consensus on language for the bill. Very broadly speaking, the winery legislation that this body passed 2 years ago clarified certain provisions in terms of what's allowed and what's not allowed in a winery. That's one set of issues with regard to wineries. Another set of issues with regard to wineries is the question of so-called special events. And again, 2 years ago, there was substantial work done in this body on events for other uses on farmland and under what circumstances those events would be allowed. The effort this time around with wineries was necessary because there's a sunset in the existing law on the special events provision. So after that sunset goes into effect, wineries would not be allowed to continue to have special events unless they've gotten approved in some other way through a county. So very broadly, this bill does two things. One, it clarifies what are the normal activities that are authorized to be carried out in a winery. And so sets out in the language of the bill exactly what those are. And then the second piece of the bill deals with the special events question. And what the winery groups have come to agreement on is essentially an approach that would allow up to 18 special events at a winery through a very simple review process by the county. Now, in the Willamette Valley, where there is more concern about cumulative impacts of wineries on farm uses, once you get above six special events, there is a more involved process with public notice, full land use process for review of those special events, and additional criteria and conditions authorized to deal with conflict issues between the events and surrounding land uses. So that's those are the basic concepts in the bill. Speaking directly to the dash sevens, which are before you as I understand, I have not had a lot of time to look at these, but there do appear to be several places where the language in the bill needs to be tightened up, frankly, both with regard to the home occupations authorization and then with regard to some of the authorization for commercial uses in conjunction with farm use. Basically, if a winery can't fit within the standard path and has to go outside of that, there's some concern with the language in the dash sevens. So I have talked with Oregon wine growers about these issues. We agree that these could be dealt with by amendment over on the House side should the committee decide to pass this out of this committee and should the Senate choose to pass the bill over to the House side. But I just want to be on record about those issues. With that, I'm going to conclude my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions? Yes, Senator Brzezinski.
Richard, can you, I know you've just barely got to see these, could you document those areas of concern that are in the dash sevens for us?
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, and Senator Brzezinski, I can, again with a proviso that I have not really had time to look all the way through the bill, so there could be one or two other things. But specifically, I'm talking about page 1, lines 8 through 14, which is the home occupations piece, which would authorize a bed and breakfast to serve any meals to up to 18 people. And the policy concern there is just it starts to look a little bit potentially like a restaurant. And we don't want functionally these uses to look like a restaurant. This body has had lots of struggles about restaurants on farmland in the past, and we don't need to go there again. So we can work on that issue with the Wine Growers Association and with folks concerned about the home occupation issue. This is a portion of the bill, frankly, that did not come out of the work group. So that's why we're reacting a little bit at the last minute. The other concerns, Senator Przanski, have to do with lines 16 through 22, the bottom of page 1. These are, again, provisions that would authorize wineries that don't fit within the standard path to seek to use a different authorization in the law for commercial activity in conjunction with farm use. So, for instance, in Southern Oregon in particular, we have wineries that that operate on very small properties. And this, I think, is intended to deal with that issue. It's also intended to deal with the issue of what we call stacking, where you have a winery that has gone through the standard path but wants to do some additional use that's not within the normal scope of a winery. This is to make clear that that is allowed. We don't have any problem with the latter concept. With the former concept about the small wineries, we want to be very careful that we're not essentially changing existing law on that. So those are the concerns.
If I can follow up,
please.
Richard, if there's, I know that you've just looked at this, so if you do find others, if you could let us know what those might be.
We will.
That would be appreciated.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We anticipate a little bit of work in the House. I know they've talked to us about some other kinds of things, so I feel good about that one. Yes.
Thank you,
Senator
Mr.
Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Richard, do you feel comfortable we're all within our statewide planning goals on this, and are you, is the governor's office comfortable with that?
Chair Roblin, Senator Bartscheiger, I think we are supportive of the collaborative product of the work group. We do have long-term concerns, and these were expressed in the work group, with the cumulative impacts or effects of not just wineries, but all the other uses that are allowed on farmland in terms of assuring that we have a healthy, well-functioning both agricultural industry and forest products industry. There is other legislation over on the House side that is a study bill looking at some of those cumulative effect issues, where I think we'll give some further attention, not just for wineries, but for other uses in terms of just making sure that we've got the right tools in place to make sure our forest products industry and agricultural industries continue to be healthy.
Follow up?
Oh, yes.
I guess my only concern, I think it's a great idea, don't get me wrong. I just worry that, you know, if we go ahead and we do this, and I'm fine with it, is that we don't come back in a couple of years later after these wineries have made all these investments and everything and then say, oh, well, now we don't want you to do this. I have some concern there.
If I could, Chair Roblin, Senator Bartscheiger, the various winery bills we've worked on over the last several years have all recognize that uses that are lawfully established will get to continue. That's not to say if we have problems in the future, we won't come back and ask that on a going forward basis, we may need to tighten things up if we run into trouble.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And I think we've been fairly consistent with that, because there's
yes.
a few of the larger ones that have certain things that we have not put into any of these others. So.
That's correct.
Okay. Any other questions? So we're in a work session, and I would like to put the sevens just so we have it. We know what we're doing. We won't pass the bill out today. We'll wait until Sunday so people can look at it one more time, and then have another work session then. If that's okay with the committee, any concerns with that? Then I will entertain a motion from Senator Dasher.
Okay. Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendment stated.
Sevens.
Or Dash 7s, I'm sorry. I gotta wear my glasses from now on. Dash 7 amendment stated 4-16-13 for Senate Bill 841.
Senator Bertschinger moves to adopt the Dash 7 amendment stated 4-16-13. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any objection to the Dash 7s? Seeing none. Adopted. And we're going to close the work.
Before you do that, I thought he was going to move the Dash 3s. Which actually set up the two zones, the north zone and the south zone.
I thought you thought
if he wants
to,
I actually have those available for him.
I appreciate that.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
I know. I appreciate that. Thank you for that very much, though. I do appreciate it. So we're going to close our work session on Senate Bill 841. And we will move Senate Bill 841 to Thursday. We'll carry it forward to Thursday for a work session. Now we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 77. And we've heard a bunch of testimony on this. I think we've got most people back. We had a couple of concerns the last time. This, we'll have a short explanation of the bill, and then I'll entertain a motion from Senator Bashir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we heard this bill on February 26th and then April 11th, and it has no revenue impact for the proposed Dash 5 amendment, and the fiscal statement was issued for the proposed Dash 5 amendment. And just as a reminder of what the Dash 5 does is that this is the bill that specifies land use data that LUBA must track and report on its website, and then it also authorizes LUBA, upon request by a petitioner, respondent, or intervener, to toll the timelines until subsequent decisions are made, not to exceed 2 years, and then consolidate all related appeals and review those in a single consolidated proceeding.
Okay. So with that, Senator Bashir.
I'm just looking over my Dash amendments again. Okay, there's no many.
Yes, there are.
Yes. Okay. All right, Chair.
Well, we do have a revenue and
we
fiscal.
We have a fiscal on it.
We have both of those. Mm-hmm. The fiscal is a indeterminate, but we can move forward.
Does that, on the money amount, didn't that go from from 1,000 to 500 on the Dash?
Mr. Chair, member, or Senator Bertschiger, this is the Dash 5 doesn't have any increases in fees. That was okay. The Dash 6 that had those. This one has no fees in it.
Okay.
That was the reason.
All right.
We're keeping the fees the way they are.
Okay. Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 5 amendments dated 4/10/13
to Senate Bill 77. Senator Bashir moves to adopt the Dash 5 amendments dated 10/4/13. Is there any discussion?
4/10/13.
4/10/13. Thank you. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any objection? Seeing none. They are adopted. Senator Bashir.
Chair Roblin, I moved Senate Bill 77 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bertschiger moves Senate Bill 77 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any objection? Also seeing none. It is passed, and I'm going to ask Senator Beyer if he would like to carry. He worked very hard on this. If he doesn't, I can carry it. So, and we'll close our work session on Senate Bill 77. So we will be carrying over Senate Bill 250, Senate Bill 19, Senate Bill 606, and Senate Bill 737. I think that covers all of them. Okay, so we need to carry over.
Well, I probably shouldn't say anything, but
we are going to carry that one over, 538. We've already had that conversation.
Okay.
We're good. Thank you. So with that, any other business that anybody has?
We're done.
We're going to close our...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I hate to do this again, but I think you need to carry 841 over. Didn't you just adopt the Dash 7s, but we haven't moved the bill?
841? Mm-hmm. I think we already have it posted.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But thank you. I checked that myself earlier today, and then I forgot.
I just,
when you asked
you know,
me, I got, when you asked me, I just went, okay,
I don't want you to gavel and say, no. You know, you might want to do
that's
this.
True. And it is posted, right? Are we sure?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just checked again. Thank you. And it is posted.
It is posted. I would carry it over if it wasn't. So I agree. And I think I should use your comment earlier. If any of the ones that I haven't missed, if I missed anything that I should have said, we will carry those over, too. I think we did that in judiciary this morning.
Yes, we did.
So that being said, with that, we will close our hearing, our committee meeting for today. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I appreciate that.